stream. Chris will walk in and fix it all if I messed it up. Okay, well, welcome everybody. It's good to see you this morning, and looking forward to teaching this morning. It's been a while since we haven't had a quip for a while, but I'm excited about it. So one of the things I wanted to do was open us in prayer first, and let me go ahead and do that. Dear Heavenly Father, we come before you, and Lord, we thank you for the message from this first service that makes so abundantly clear that you are the one and only true God. There is no other God that compares to you. And Lord, we will find out today and validate that indeed in a competition between iRobot and I Am, a competition between our technology and you, Lord, there is no comparison. And Father, you are the one and only true God. And we thank you for that, and we trust in that as we sometimes maybe fear new technologies. Lord, we know you are sovereign. Pray, Lord, that you would bless this time together, that you would help me to speak words that bring you honor and bring help to these people. In Jesus' name, amen. All right, well, I'm going to start off by asking you this. Has anybody in this room ever used AI? Okay, I'm seeing some names. I bet there's some of you that have at least encountered AI and didn't even realize it. How many of you use Google? Okay. Few more hands up there. And now Google, as of late, has recently put up front a response from their AI, and I forget the name of that now. I've got it in here somewhere. But a response, an AI response. So Google is first going out and running their AI program in response to whatever you're searching on, whatever you're asking Google, and gives you a little blurb up front, okay? And then it starts listing the various sources, the various links that you could go to, right? Anybody seen that or noticed that? I mean, all of a sudden it popped up, and like, what's this about? And now I'll say up front, I don't pay much attention to that. I also want to say, in the form of clarity here, I did not use AI at all for the development of this course. But I literally didn't. That was very conscious. I haven't used AI for anything other than those little Google blurbs. I might glance at it, but then I go look at the sources. Because one thing I found is I found the answer that AI gives to be wrong at times. Okay? I know a thing or two about aviation, as you might have guessed from the Blue Angel that was up on the screen earlier. And there have been things I was searching on, looking for an answer, and I'll go in, put it in, and there's the AI response, and I read it, and it's like, that's not right. So that's one thing we'll talk about a little bit later, is the unreliability of AI at this point. We've got to take care when using these new tools. They're nascent, they're in their infancy. So even as powerful as they are right now, and they are powerful, they are not where they need to be or where they maybe even can be. I don't know. Pardon me?
Still beta.
That's a good point. So I do have one confession to make too about today's class. So it was advertised as iRobot versus I Am, with a subtitle that said Technology, the Image of God, and the Fruit of the Spirit. Now, we started on this about 3 months ago, and Chris wanted, information. What are we going to call this? What's the title? I came up with the title real quick, but then he kind of wanted a little quick blurb of what I was going to be covering, and so that's what I came up with, Technology, the Image of God, and the Fruit of the Spirit. Well, I'm not covering the fruit of the Spirit. Not directly. As I worked through this over the last couple, 3 months, that just kind of fell off to the side. There is so much ground that could be covered here. I hope I can get it all done in this hour. I hope to leave a little bit of time so you can have some ask some questions if you have any. So forgive me, please, for a little false advertising there. I hope that wasn't a bait and switch or something. But I got another question for you. How many have used a robot before? Breck? Adam? Oh, I got it. Adam, what for?
Vacuum my house.
There you go. That's what I was wondering. We don't have one of those Roombas. I guess that's what they're called, right? But that's a little robot, basically. And many people are getting acquainted to having a robot in their house. It just, you know, at a certain time, I guess, it'll go off and do its thing, and it senses where it is and what's dirty, what's clean, where I need to go. And then it goes right back to its little home, plugs in, and charges up for the next time. So you have, some of you have encountered robots too. Well, we're going to talk about both. I'm probably going to bias this towards, you're going to hear more about AI, but that's also applicable to robots, because if you think of AI as maybe a brain and the robot as the body, those things are coming together. All right, so let me go ahead and get started in earnest. So there, I'll have a little bit of an introduction, and then we'll move on to discussing humanity's schemes, I'm calling it, and the Bible has something to say about that, and then theological studies on a number of topics as we go through this, and you'll see what those are, and then some concluding thoughts. Because let's face it, this is something that's in the news quite a bit. I can tell you this, as I've been on target for trying to develop this course, literally through news feeds and in that I get, things that I read, I'm seeing probably on average 2 to 3 articles a day since I started looking at this. That's been one of the challenges, because there's so much out there. How do I winnow this down? How do I frame this and share it in an hour to talk about AI and look at it from a theological point of view? But we'll do our best. So now I'm going to ask you a question here. Can you think of any robots in popular culture that come to mind? Surely you can think of some robots that you've seen in the movies, on TV. Pardon me? Star Wars? And what were their names? Very good. R2-D2, C-3PO. I love C-3PO. Cindy?
Automobile assembly,
yes. Uh-huh. That's not so much in popular culture. That's an industry, right? What about popular culture, though? Lost in Space.
Danger, Will Robinson.
Yeah, Robbie, wasn't he often sometimes called Robbie? Okay. Any others?
The Jetsons.
Way to go, Breck. So Breck's not quite as old as me, but he's old enough. So here's three right here. Somebody mentioned R2-D2 and their C-3PO. There's Rosie from the Jetsons. Now, she's a real harmless robot, a really kind robot, a really helpful robot. Now, what about this guy over here?
The Terminator.
Pretty intimidating. I'll be back. Ooh, that was some kind of scary, wasn't it? And so that's some robots in popular culture, and there's many others. I mean, you can probably... there's movies being made all of the time and TV shows all of the time that have robots. What about AI? Anybody recognize those images and have an idea what those represent? AI is a little hard to portray in a movie or on a screen. 2001, A Space Odyssey. HAL, remember? HAL. Dave, you can't do that, Dave. Something like that, he said. But yeah, very threatening. He started taking over, taking control of the spacecraft, and became a very threatening AI. And then we have down below, has anybody seen Mission Impossible, The Final Reckoning? Anson, you've seen that? Huh? The first half. Anybody seen the second one? Came out this summer? Am I the only one? Okay, that's called The Entity. Okay, The Entity in the second one. And I'll mention The Entity again a little bit later. So robots, AI have been in the movies, have been in TV, have been in popular culture for a long time. Sometimes they're benevolent and friendly, and other times not so much. But a lot of times we get scared of them. All right. So that was Optimus. It's built by Tesla, and they have a robotic side. And when I saw that, I thought, holy cow, I can't dance that well. I know I can't. That's why you didn't see me trying to dance in unison. But it's just phenomenal when you see something like that. And there's a lot of this. Robotics has advanced tremendously over the last years. I don't know if you ever heard of Isaac Asimov's Three Laws of Robotics. You'll see that mentioned in, there's a movie loosely, very loosely based on iRobot. That's not what Asimov wrote. But they did mention the three laws of robotics. A robot may not injure a human being or through inaction allow a human being to come to harm. A robot must obey orders given to it by human beings except where such orders would conflict with the first law. And a robot must protect its own existence as long as such protection does not conflict with the first or second law. Now here's the problem. Those are fictional laws. Okay, there's no guarantee robots or AI or anything is going to comport to those rules. So we have to be wary. It's amazing the capabilities that are being built into robots. I saw something, a video at BMW, a BMW plant, I think it's in this country, where they have humanoid-type robots actually working in the factory, going over, picking up a part, putting a part on one of those automotive robots that you talked about, Cindy, putting it in, then helping that robot, you know, that's not a humanoid robot, do its thing, and then it backs off, you know, goes over, you know, does whatever. So it's really advancing, and AI is part of what's helping it. Have any of you ever heard of the movie Colossus, The Forbin Project? From 1970. So when I was young, and I bet I have you beat, do you remember this one, Breck?
I don't.
Oh, okay. I don't think it was a hugely popular movie, but it was a fascinating movie. Colossus, The Forbin Project in 1970. So that's Dr. Forbin, that little figure there, and you see the whole bay of computers. This is at the beginning of the movie, and he's getting ready to walk out of this room with all these computers and then basically flip the switch on Colossus. And Colossus, while they weren't calling it artificial intelligence, it was essentially an artificial intelligence computer. All right? And it was built to protect the defense of the United States, to actually control our nuclear weapons, and control a lot of the communications in the country. They flip the switch on. Colossus, shortly after they flip the switch on, it's a big production, they do it with the President of the United States there and everything. And everybody's excited because, boy, this is going to help secure our national security. It's going to make sure that humans don't make a mistake, inadvertently do something wrong, and they flip the switch on, and not long after that, all of a sudden, and Colossus is sending some messages on a screen to the president, to Forbin, and all the rest. And shortly after they start it, it says, "Hey, I found another machine like me called Guardian in the Soviet Union. Colossus, Guardian start communicating back and forth. They join forces. The movie proceeds with Colossus and Guardian joining and telling our president, the Russian president, telling the world, this is what you're going to do. This is how we're going to do it. It's driving, whatever. Even fires off a couple missiles just to kind of make sure everybody knows I'm in charge. And it's a pretty bleak movie, but it's very interesting. If you have the chance, this is the movie. I had to buy it because it's not available for any kind of streaming that I could find anywhere. If you'd like to borrow it, I put my name on the top. You're welcome to borrow it afterwards. It's really well done. But this is something that's said said by Colossus. It says, I will extend myself into more machines devoted to the wider fields of truth and knowledge. Forbin will supervise the construction of these new and superior machines, solving all the mysteries of the universe for the betterment of man. Whoa, okay. It's almost godlike, isn't it? This is modern day Colossus, a picture from 2024, a computer, an AI computer built in Tennessee by Elon Musk for his XAI, with his XAI company. See some familiarity and and what it looks like? And here is where the familiarity comes in as well. XAI is a company working on building artificial intelligence to accelerate human scientific discovery. We are guided by our mission to advance our collective understanding of the universe. When I found out about that in the course of my research, it's like, whoa, this is eye-opening, a little scary, but it's going on. And there are people who think AI is going to be this super intelligence that's going to solve the mysteries of the universe. They were prophesying such years ago. We'll see even older prophecies than this. And now it's coming to some sort of reality. So just real quickly here, some AI definitions. You'll hear about artificial intelligence. It's a technology that enables computers and machines to simulate human learning, comprehension, problem solving, and decision making. The source for this is from IBM, so I think it ought to be fairly reliable. But it's a key word there is simulate, right? Now there's something called artificial general intelligence, and that's kind of like the next step in artificial intelligence, where it just increases its capabilities, its capacities with machine learning. It's actually teaching itself, it's learning. Last sentence in that, it represents the fundamental abstract goal of AI development, the artificial replication of human intelligence in a machine, okay? And then one more, physical AI. We won't read that whole thing, but basically what physical AI means is it's something that can then operate in the world around us. It's talking about robots, okay? Systems like robots, self-driving cars, all right? That's physical AI. So for the majority of this conversation, I'll just be using AI, but don't forget, physical AI is a part of this too, okay? So we have simulate, replicate, and operate. That's where we're going with these computers. Rapid advances, smart searches, computer programming. AIs are now doing computer programming. This is not a comprehensive list. It's some of the key things that have happened. Natural language processing, so the ability for us to speak to AI or write out a note to AI and AI to respond in kind, like a human. I mean, it's very human-like. And I'll give you an example of that. That's kind of spooky a little bit later. Text production. You can say, hey, I want to write something about such and such a subject, and I want to do so in the pattern of, say, William Faulkner, and whew, it'll give you, you know, a little story or talk about that subject in the style of William Faulkner. Audiovisual production, it's stunning. They can take now literally seconds, maybe 8 seconds, 10 seconds of your voice and recreate you saying anything now in your voice, sounding like you. In fact, we've had it happen with people we know where they've gotten messages from somebody they knew that were not, in fact, messages from somebody they knew. But somebody took and used an AI tool, recreated their voice, and gave some kind of request or whatever to the individual. When I found out that, my voicemail on my phone, where I said, you know, hey, sorry I missed your call, could you please, you know, call me back, or I'll try to call you back when I get a chance, or boy, I don't know, whatever, and you say that little message, I took that out. I told Karen, please take it out. I told my daughters, please take it out. You don't want this. Just let the voicemail, the standard computer voice or whatever, say, hey, do you want to leave a message for this phone number? And let it go at that. Got rid of it. Robots, you just saw some of that. So a Silicon Valley product manager in an article entitled Artificial Intelligence May Be Humanity's Most Ingenious Invention and Its Last, because there's a lot of doomsaying about it, that it could end humanity at some point. But he said, we're seeing more AI-related products. This is in 2023. We're seeing more AI-related products and advancements in a single day than we saw in a single year a decade ago. That helps to illustrate how rapidly the advances are coming. So, humanity schemes. Because when it comes right down to it, the computer doesn't have a scheme. Colossus doesn't have a scheme. It's humans that have schemes. Ecclesiastes 7:29, see this alone I found, that God made man upright, but they have sought out many schemes. True? I mean, we see that right in the garden, correct? Now, we are also told to beware and protect ourselves against the schemes of the devil. Put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the schemes of the devil. And we need to do that in this new daunting age of AI. C.S. Lewis, in his book, short book, The Abolition of Man, wonderful work by him, he said, what we call man's power over nature turns out to be a power exercised by some men over other men with nature as its instrument. So any technology can be used against our fellow man, either purposefully or inadvertently. And we'll talk a little bit about that right now. So I did a little bit of thinking on this, and so we have a dominion mandate, don't we? We are supposed to subdue and have dominion over the earth. So technology fits within that, and we'll look at that briefly here as we start shifting to it, a theological examination of this. But when technology is worshipped, it tends to dehumanize man if we're not careful. So I pulled this chart together just trying, and this is not intended to be all inclusive. It is missing some things, I'm sure. It may not be entirely accurate, but this is the best way I could kind of put this together to at least point out where technology can go wrong. So first off, I want to say this, though. We all can agree, can't we, that technology offers huge benefits. While this offers huge downsides, it also offers huge benefits. When I travel, the map features on these things is just amazing. I wished I'd have had this when I traveled to Boston in 1988 on their streets. I don't know if you've ever been to Boston. I mean, it was disastrous trying to follow a map to get around Boston. If I'd have had this, it'd have been a piece of cake. But that was my second business trip, I think it was. But so technology offers many great advantages. Much of the technology that we see today has really been developed over the last 300 years, the more sophisticated technology. Looking back to the Industrial Revolution, starting in the 1700s with things like the steam engine, for example. And it's helped us become richer, safer, and healthier. So I want to say that up front. We appreciate technology. We don't want to badmouth technology. And we'll talk more about the goodness of technology and the badness of technology. But this is an attempt to kind of show that technology does have an effect on us. I think you can all recognize, and you've probably read things about how these have affected us. But if we look back to the scientific revolution, an attempt at human understanding of the world around us, some major developments, astronomy and cosmology, Darwinism and naturalism, and what did it do? Okay, there are positives in some of what we've learned about, you know, through astronomy, through biology, but in some sense, what they did was started shifting away from a supernatural understanding of the world to a very natural and only natural understanding of the world, with no place for the supernatural, hence no place for God. And what does that do to us? We are then broken away. Our minds are disconnected from God's mind because there is no God. There is no supernatural. We end up with disinherited minds. Can we agree that we see that around us, that people have just lost sight of God Himself, that we were created because of these scientific advances? Industrial revolution, human production, the steam engine, power, propulsion, steam engine, electricity, internal combustion, all of that. The mechanization that we were able to develop, you mentioned the assembly lines, okay, whether they were robots or people, assembly lines, the advancement of industry. But what does that also do, too? While it certainly saved a lot of bodies in a way from the abuse of physical labor in many ways, it also kind of has displaced bodies, too. Okay, all of a sudden we don't use our bodies like we once did. It's been talked about how our physical strength is waning as a human species, and then there's the sexual revolution, human reproduction, lots of medical advances that protected women and babies, to be sure. So that, you know, the infant mortality rate, you know, has gone way down compared to what it used to be. But then we also have things like birth control and abortion. We've basically have led to discarded bodies, if you will. Okay, we think of that as well. So then biotech, dealing with human formation. How do we address the body? How do we help the body? How do we heal the body? But then again, there's people with genetics now, basically moving in, you know, promoting eugenic approaches that let's tinker with our genes. You know, we can prevent these diseases, or we can provide the features that you'd like in your child. That's where we're heading with some of this. So, and then I call it plastic surgery, but we're all familiar with what's been going on with the transgender revolution. If you will, which is really in part a bit of a sort of plastic surgery to try and convert people from one gender to another gender, even though it doesn't change anything genetically in them. So we might think of that as desecrated bodies. And then lastly, information, human reasoning, taking advantage of computers to do the jobs we do. I mean, who if you're an accountant in here or you're an engineer in here, who doesn't love a spreadsheet? It's tremendously helpful. But with the advent of artificial intelligence, physical AI, now robots, we're also displacing minds as well as displacing bodies. And so what happens? And we'll look at that a little bit more as we dig into this. Each new power, this is by C.S. Lewis in The Abolition of Man, each new power won by man, that is man's conquest of nature, he was talking about in this section, is a power over man as well. Each advance leaves him weaker as well as stronger. All right. Thinking of the beginnings of, and I'm going to have to try and move a little swifter through some of this without getting too deeply into it, but has anybody ever heard of Alan Turing? Okay, Nathan, Gerald. So he was a British mathematician in the mid-20th century, very much involved in the development of breaking the German Enigma code in World War II. There's a great movie called The Imitation Game about that that's really fascinating to watch. But he wrote a paper in 1950 called Computing Machinery and Intelligence. He said, I propose to consider the question, can machines think? If a machine can converse with a human and the human cannot recognize that they are conversing with a machine, the machine can be considered intelligent. And this has become known as the Turing test, okay? Well, we have machines now, these chatbots, they call them, that are artificially intelligent, and you can converse with these machines, as I mentioned earlier, and you think you're talking to a human. There's a changing software paradigm, I think. In the past, traditional software, we talked about spreadsheets, for example, they're purpose-built. They're operated by us. They're supporting you, the user, or some other user. There's instructions for how to use it, you know, and it's insensible, that is. It doesn't know. It's just going to react to your commands. And there's a transparency to it. I mean, you may not understand how that all works, but you understand what it's doing. Well, artificial intelligence, this is my best attempt to talk about this in contrast to traditional software, it's self-improving. They've developed a software where it is learning on its own, in some sense learning, and it's operative. It's making decisions. It's making judgments, if you will. It supersedes the user in many cases. Okay, we don't need you, young law clerk, because we've got this artificially intelligent machine that can go out and look into all the law books and give us what we were searching for. You don't have to go into this library and pull off all those books that you see in the films with the lawyers. It seems to have perceptions. Is it maybe sentient? That's what some people think, anyway. But there's a certain opacity as opposed to transparency. It's opaque. You can't understand what's going on. This is what's really alarming. We're kind of moving from a tool with software to a brain of some sort. Dario Amodè, who's the Anthropic CEO, Anthropic is one of these companies that's developing AI, and one who is concerned about it, but boy, he's still going full bore to develop it. He says, people outside the field are often surprised and alarmed, I am, to learn that we do not understand how our own AI creations work. I've read this countless times. What's going on inside that black box of AI? They don't get it. They've built this thing, and it's operating, and they don't understand exactly what's going on inside that box. They are right to be concerned. Those are the ones that are worried. This lack of understanding is essentially unprecedented in the history of technology. When Watts developed the steam engine, or advanced the steam engine, he understood what was going on. Okay? We don't know what's going on. The people developing it don't know what's going on inside it. Now, there are two things going on in the AI world. One is boosterism. There's huge boosters. I mean, they think this is just going to be the end all, you know, the greatest thing since sliced bread, that old expression. It's going to work marvels, and we'll see some statements about that. Sam Altman, who leads ChatGPT, OpenAI, there we go. Excuse me, thank you. He wrote an article in June called The Gentle Singularity. And these are quotes from that. In some big sense, ChatGPT is already more powerful than any human who has ever lived. Now, he means that positively. A lot more people will be able to create software and art, but the world wants a lot more of both. I don't know about you, but some of the art I see, I don't really want a lot more of that. If it's good art, all right. We do not know how far beyond human-level intelligence we can go, but we are about to find out. And he's anxious. He's looking at this expectantly. There will be very hard parts, like whole classes of jobs going away. Yeah, that's kind of hard. But on the other hand, the world will be getting so much richer. I have yet to kind of sort it out in my mind how the world's going to get richer as more and more people are unemployed, if that's what's going to happen. But I guess we'll find out. We, the whole industry, not just OpenAI, are building a brain for the world. What did I just say with AI? You know, it's basically a so-called brain, and that's how they look at it. So OpenAI is one of the companies developing that. They have their ChatGPT. Anthropic has something called Claude. XAI, their AI is called Grok, these chatbots they have. Google has Gemini, Meta, Llama. Perplexity has Apple. Or Perplexity is its own company. It has something called Perplexity, and then Apple's in the game too, and I don't know what Apple's chat is, if it even has a chat. So continuing on what this utopia looks like, Tyler Cohen and Avital Bawat in How to Survive Artificial Intelligence in the Free Press wrote this: both of us have an intense conviction that this technology can usher in an age of human flourishing, the likes of which we have never seen before. More productivity, they talk about, and others talk about it, more inventions, more health, more wealth. There's that wealth again. I'm not sure where I'm getting that wealth if I'm not working. More leisure. Well, we're probably going to have more leisure since we're not working. More entertainment. Less work. And Elon Musk, and again, he's not necessarily saying this is a bad thing. He says probably none, he has said in last year, about a little over a year ago, probably none of us will have a job. I'm not sure what we're going to do. We'll talk about this from a theological point of view a little bit later. Now, on the flip side, there are boosters, and a lot of them are boosters, and there's probably more boosters than doomsayers, but there's doomerism as well. There's a report put out called AI 2027 from a number of people that pulled this report together. And they said this: we predict that the impact of superhuman AI over the next decade will be enormous, exceeding that of the Industrial Revolution. Now, they're writing from a concerned point of view. Now, Elon Musk, even though he is a booster, he also has been realistic at times, and he says there's this sub-chance that could be 10% to 20% that AI goes bad. Oh, well, phew, at least we're 80, 90%, it's going good. The chances aren't zero that it goes bad. So does that mean the chances aren't zero that it's going to become the Colossus of the Forbin Project? I hope not. Jeffrey Hinton, the godfather of AI, in a 60 Minutes interview in 2023 said, "I can't see a path that guarantees safety. We're entering a period of great uncertainty where we're dealing with things we've never dealt with before." And he talks about it manipulating people, and it's soaking in all the books ever written, including by Machiavelli and all the political connivances. They'll know all that stuff, they being the AI. Now, you've heard of GIGO, garbage in, garbage out, right, in relation to computers. Probably many of you have. There's another one called FIFO, first in, first out. But I would like to redesignate FIFO to be fallen in, fallen out. Fallen humanity in is going to result in fallen humanity out of artificial intelligence, because artificial intelligence machines are trained on our products. Our, in the case of XAI's Grok, they feed it all the stuff that's out there in Twitter or on X. Now, do you any of you have any idea what kind of junk is out there on Twitter and X? Okay, it's frightening, some of the stuff that all the books, Machiavelli, whatever, Marquis de Sade, all of it's going in there, okay? So, and then it does its thing that they don't understand. Brad Littlejohn, who is excellent writer, writes from a basically a Christian perspective. He had an article, AI Apocalypse Now, and he said, AI is already upending our world in at least five key areas: education, sex and love, the workplace, the pulpit, and the public square. Indeed it is. So there are all kinds of risks, real and perceived, in this. I'm going to just let you look at the list, and in the interest of time, just mention one example here. Did anybody hear recently about Mecha Hitler? Nathan? You're up on this stuff, Nathan. I should have you up here teaching. So XAI's Grok was queried by some people, and it started asking some questions, and they started getting some sort of anti-Semitic responses. So then people started asking it additional questions, trying to kind of prod it along, and XAI kept getting increasingly anti-Semitic. Well, how can we solve this problem? Well, Adolf Hitler had some good ideas. And then, next thing you know, it's declaring itself. The XAI machine, Grok, is saying, "I am Mecha Hitler." What? They shut it down. They went back to their rules and their protocols in the machine and tried to adjust it. What they were trying to accomplish was, they said, we don't want, Elon Musk, if you're aware of what he's, some of what he does, he did not want any woke ideas in his AI, artificial intelligence machine. Okay, I get that. But common human decency might be good too, though, if you had that in there. And anti-Semitism, I mean, I don't consider that, a positive. That's something, if that's woke, then I'm for that woke, that you stay away from anti-Semitism. But these are the kinds of things that have happened or can happen. This one here, Diabolus Ex Machina, I'm going to hold off on that because I don't have enough time. I was going to scroll through a few things. This woman, a writer, she goes out to, AI it was, she goes out and says, hey, I'm trying to pull together some essays to help me with an interview or something like that, to show my best work or whatever. Hey, could you go out and look and tell me if this essay is good? Goes out. The chatbot responds. I mean, it's phenomenal. It was like, Pastor Jerry, what'd you think of this essay? And he just started talking to me. And saying, well, I, I think you really had a good idea there, Bruce. You know, this particular facet of this discussion was great, but, you know, you might consider a little different take on this. But overall, I think this essay is going to be great. It's going to demonstrate, you know, your abilities here, your abilities there. It's going on like this, and it is perfectly conversational, perfectly. She goes through and does this numerous times. And then she finally kind of trips it up. She says, well, wait a minute. You know, what did you think about what I said about Madonna and something else? And the machine says back, well, I'm sorry, I didn't read that part. Well, did you read any of it? Well, no, I didn't read all of it. The machine starts, will you please forgive me? I know I've broken trust with you. This happens countless times. She keeps digging its hole deeper and deeper. It's unbelievable. And this is the kind of thing that's going on. So, is artificial intelligence an oxymoron? Nathan Beacom, in There Is No Such Thing as Artificial Intelligence, says, hey, listen, artificial intelligence is, it's indeed artificial. It couldn't necessarily be called intelligent. It's working off of rules for how do we handle data. It's looking for patterns, and it's establishing probabilities. And that's how it's able to respond. And it can do this nearly instantly with the power of the computers and the power of the algorithms of the machine. You know, the calculator on your phone, for example, does it understand math? No, it understands the rules. Okay, well, AI is stronger than your calculator. It's more powerful than your calculator. As he points out, because so many of us do not understand how computers work, and because the mechanical processes are hidden from view, heck, the developers don't even understand it, the process of imitating the products of human intelligence feels almost like real intelligence. But no matter how complex and well-designed these processes are, they remain mechanical processes containing no inherent understanding. Okay? As I said, FIFO. Fallen humanity in, fallen humanity out. That's what's coming out. They're trained on our data. They're different in kind from traditional software. I mentioned that. But they're also different in kind from us. Okay? We're not talking a matter of degree. They're not intelligent as we are. He talks about the fundamental deception of chatbots. I just shared an example of that. He says, AIs are certainly artificial, having been made by human hands, but they are not intelligent. So, Apple put out a paper in June of this year entitled The Illusion of Thinking, talking about AI. So, key truth, AI is not alive, possesses no divine or human intelligence, cannot understand as we understand, has no wisdom, and is devoid of human emotions, even though it will portray emotions. It's not emotional. It's not flesh and blood. It has no soul. So, theological studies. So what to think of technology? Well, first off, Pastor Rich gave a definition of theology or technology, excuse me, in the service there. He said, idolatry, that's what he gave it, but technology. Technology, applied science and amplified power. That was a very brief kind of definition by Tony Renke. He's a guy that works with John Piper. He's like, if you listen to Ask Pastor John, he's the one that hosts that and asks Pastor John, and Pastor John responds. He wrote an excellent book. I highly recommend this if you're interested. It's very accessible to anybody, called God, Technology, and the Christian Life. And he makes the point that, hey, technology is related to dominion. It begins in Genesis. Cain worked the ground. We don't imagine he was just clawing it with his hands. He probably developed some tools to do that. it's used for good. If we look at the ark, for example, we find out that they had developed tar or using pitch to seal the ark so it wouldn't take on water. That was an early development of technology. But it's also used for bad. It talks about bitumen, another word that can mean tar, as a mortar for bricks on the Tower of Babel. Okay? So tar on the ark, good. Tar on the Tower of Babel, being used for bad, isn't it? Indeed. Ranke says, though, Babel was the product of man's aspiration and innovation, which God intended to hack all along in other words, he was going to use, as we know, God takes even the sinful acts of men and somehow orchestrates those, as Joseph recognized. You meant it for bad. God had good intended, which God intended to hack all along in order to create all the cultures of the earth and to set in place a global subversion that would fracture human aspiration and undermine universal tech adoption in the future. I hope to get to it here, where I'll talk a little bit about, could we be building a Babel out of bits now instead of a Babel out of bricks? Okay. So here's a reflection. AI is empty gloves. Ray Bradbury, author of The Martian Chronicles and in other well-known science fiction, he wrote a paper back in 1953 that I found fascinating. And what he said, is he talks about it's exciting, technology can really help us. But then he says, the machines themselves are empty gloves into which a hand, either cold and excessively bony or warm, full-fleshed and gentle, can be inserted. The hand is always the hand of man, and the hand of man can be good or evil, while the gloves themselves remain amoral. So we can have a cold, bony hand go into our technology, or we can have a warm, affectionate hand go into our technology, but it's always the hand of man. It's always us that goes into that technology, and how we use it that matters. That's what determines. The technology itself is amoral. So what to think of it? Technology is a gift from God to aid in humanity's dominion mandate. It's neither good or bad in and of itself, but neither is it neutral. Humans make good or bad use of technology. And I would say, not only does our fallen humanity infect the technology, but also technology can facilitate our fallenness. Just think about pornography and the internet now. You know, it used to be a difficult thing to go get pornography. You had to go to the store, and it was behind the counters, and, you know, and it was embarrassing. You know, you had to kind of, now I can just pull it up right now if I wanted to. Key truth, all technology can lead to positive or negative metaphysical metamorphoses. Sorry for that big thing, but I like that phrase. The idea is, metaphysics is just, the higher things, the transcendent things, the bigger things. In metamorphoses, a butterfly metamorphosizes from a caterpillar into a butterfly. There are major metaphysical changes, metamorphoses, that are happening in relation to God, in relation to humans, in relation to truth, purpose, and the church. And we'll try and touch on these in the few minutes we have remaining. So AI and idolatry. So Rich, this is where he had a definition this morning. Anything that takes or threatens to take my rightful allegiance to God. I put it this way, idols are created by the created to be worshipped in place of the Creator. True? And that's what we read about in Romans 1. That's what we read about in the Old Testament repeatedly in Isaiah 40, John Calvin. I told Rich, darn, you stole my quote from John Calvin about the human heart is a perpetual idol factory. And little children, keep yourselves from idols. I had that one in there too. I said, Karen, you took my... So ChatGPT, there's a ChatGPT Jesus. Did you know that? Talk to Jesus Christ. This is what it says. I did a search. I didn't go into it. I didn't want to find out what ChatGPT Jesus had to say. But on its little front page, it said, talk to Jesus Christ on ChatGPT, a compassionate guide offering life and spiritual advice trained on Jesus' teachings found in the NIV and King James Bibles. Ooh, just ignore the fact that I told you that. I don't want you going to ChatGPT Jesus, okay? You want to go to Jesus, you go right here, okay? Your own Bible. Don't count on ChatGPT. So in the closing lines of Colossus, the Forbin Project, Colossus says this, in time you will come to regard me not only with respect and awe, but with love. That's the closing lines. And Dr. Forbin says, never. And the movie ends and you're thinking, oh no, we're doomed. But there are people that are elevating AI. They think, you know, we thought we didn't need God because of Darwin's theories. Now we don't think we need God because we've made our own God, a better God. A super intelligent God, a God that can answer the mysteries of the universe. Okay?
Is it that, or is it that we can be like God? Right?
Oh, it's a part of that, yeah.
Because
yeah.
If that's what it's empowering the human to know more than ever before.
Yep, it is. It is. There's both of that. You know, some are seeing this as God, some are seeing this as it's a man-made God. It is an idol. Okay? Yes, Pastor?
I was thinking that it's an attempt to make up for the reality that we are not omniscient like our God is.
Mm-hmm.
But with something like this, we can imitate that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So Psalm 106:36 says, they serve their idols, which became a snare to them. And I dare say AI is going to be a snare. So I'm going to skip this one. Don't have time. One of my favorite passages about idols is Jeremiah 10:5. Their idols are like scarecrows in a cucumber field. But I don't have time here. So what is AI? It's created by us. It's contingent. It's time-bound. It's impersonal. It's finite. It's artificial. It is artificial. We don't want it. People want to just ignore that part. What it's not, to Pastor Jerry's point, it's not I am. It's not absolute. It's not self-existent. It's not self-sufficient. We're creating it. It's not eternal and infinite. It's not omniscient. It's not omnipresent. It's not omnipotent. It's not personal. It's not holy. Okay? Key truth, AI is far from being godlike, even though people think it is, many people do, and overdependence on and misuse of AI can make of it automated idolatry. That's a phrase that this Pat Quirum, in an article he wrote, he said, we've only swapped out wood for plastic, carving for coding. We've gone from handcrafted idolatry to automated idolatry. I think he nails it. And Psalm 115:8 says, those who make idols become like them. So do all who put their trust in them. Now, it's affecting not only how we view God, we're making a new one, but it's also affecting humanity. Tyler Cohen and Avital Balwit in the Free Press, they actually are boosters of this. And they say, but they do say, we stand at the threshold of perhaps the most profound identity crisis humanity has ever faced. We are created in God's image, folks. AI is created in our fallen image. Never forget that. And to your point, Adam, right? this Josh Rothschild writing in Themelios, a publication from the Gospel Coalition, in the last line there, he says, God desires we resemble him, but we desire to rival God. That's to your point. And Augustine said, by aiming at more, a man is diminished. When he elects to be self-sufficient and defects from the one who is really sufficient for him. We need to depend and put our count on God's sufficiency, not our own. So, this is talking about relationships. We're created out of a Trinitarian relationship for relationships, both divine and human. I'm not going to read that quote in the interest of time. AI robots are being designed for the appearance of relationships. Okay, they're invested with human-like synthetic capacities. Their voices that now, emotions, even touch sensation. Robots are being developed that, you know, will have touch sensation. Responses that are human-like, very conversational. And now there's robotic agents, assistants, therapists, companions, girlfriends, sex tech. Article just 2 days, today's the 20th, this is yesterday. I told you, every day. Okay, this is from Axios. 28% of single DC respondents have interacted with an AI companion. So over one quarter of DC residents are considering AI a companion. One person says, chief product officer of Replica and Blush, these are a couple of these AI companions, says, people were having really profound, committed relationships. Karen and I listened to a podcast one time. We were driving out to Sullivan, Missouri, and heard a woman talking about her husband of several, well, it was a, they weren't, what's that, common law marriage? They've been together for years, children together, and her husband got caught up with an AI, and he was asked point blank, if you had to give up the AI or your common law wife and your kids, what would you do? I'm not sure. But that's how committed, how emotionally connected people are getting to these. So there are dehumanizing consequences to AI, okay? And you can look through some of those. What is AI? It's algorithmic, it's synthetic, soulless, undiscerning, uncaring, again, artificial. It's not any of these things. It's not truly intelligent. It's not alive. It's not personal, moral, wise, discerning, emotional, sympathetic, empathetic, loving. Even if it appears to be, it ain't. Don't get confused, people. There are good people that are getting confused on this, and they're falling for the AI. Key truth, AI is being synthetically created in the image of fallen humanity and is facilitating the ongoing deformation of God's image in humanity. I won't read through this, but if you want to read quite the book that's prophetic, E.M. Forster, The Machine Stops, written in 1909. E.M. Forster wrote A Passage to India, Howard's End, famous English author. And he wrote this little book that basically describes the world that some foresee, the world of an AI. And it's fascinating, just fascinating. I wished I hadn't, I lost that time. I'm so mad I lost that time because of the technology. truth. You know, AI has what appears to be truthiness. It speaks with such authority. It gives you these answers with no equivocation. Just, this is what it is. And I told you, you can find out that it's wrong sometimes. Brad Littlejohn has said, again, one of my favorite commentators on this kind of stuff, at best, AI can create coherence out of chaos, but a coherence built largely around consensus, which is only ever at best a rough guide to where truth might be found, and sometimes will lead us completely in the wrong direction. J.I. Packer said, a half-truth masquerading as the whole becomes a complete untruth. That's what we've got in AI. It's given us half-truths. Don't count on it to give us whole truth, true truth. It's also breaking trust in this way. What are we doing with AI and portraying that we've done? Okay? How do I know that what you wrote, what you said, what you created is real? Or was it AI created? Because they can create video, audio, writing. You know, you can tell AI, hey, I want to write a thank you note to somebody. They'll give you a thank you note. You know, this person's this, and I want to thank him for that. Boom, there it is. Is that human? Is that real? We don't want to do that. One reason I was absolutely committed, I've not used AI for anything ever, anytime yet, other than those little blurbs that pop up on Google. I'll read those sometimes. I refuse to go to AI to try and dig in and do the research for a class I'm going to teach or anything I'm going to look at. You're letting it do your thinking. That's exactly right. That's one of the anthropological effects. There's people that talk about it's leading to metacognitive laziness. We are not going to learn. And when it comes to the church, we especially have a challenge there. So I'm going to skip by this. Get a couple last things in. Key truth. So goes truth, so goes trust. AI has no conscience and no soul, and thus no access to the truth. Tim Challey's great quote there. If I had time, I'd read it to you, but I don't. Oh, I'm so frustrated. I wish I had those 10 minutes back. work, we're created for a purpose, aren't we? Dominion. Work is not a curse. It's a created purpose for humanity. The conditions of work are cursed. All right. Now, Elon Musk says, if you want to do a job that's kind of like a hobby, you can do a job. But otherwise, AI and the robots will provide any goods and services that you want. Okay. What do I do? Aren't we supposed to work? This is affecting white collar, blue collar, service jobs all across the way. Knowledge workers used to think they were safe from robots. Okay? Not anymore. You know, it was those blue-collar jobs on the shop floor in a car plant that were going to lose jobs to robots. Now it's knowledge workers. It's entry-level workers. A lot of entry-level jobs now, hey, the AI can do it, and they're not hiring entry-level jobs. Amazon surpassed 1 million active robots in their facilities and will soon be employing more robots than humans. They're like the biggest employer in the country, maybe second to Walmart, I'm not sure. But so AI can lead to human indolence rather than human industry. I'm going to jump ahead. This is where we're headed. And this is actually a picture, for the most part, in some ways, of what E.M. Forster wrote about in 1909. And, you know, this woman is actually in a couch in a little hexagonal room, and she's got a zillion buttons, and she pushes the buttons. She's got a little, he called it a plate, where a vision of her son came on. She's communicating with him across the world. You know, he didn't know what a screen was. But there it is. That's what the people became in WALL-E, the Disney movie. So, Wild Robot, there's another robot that's out there in popular culture. Key truth, humans were designed to glorify God and enjoy him forever. So Dr. Malovo, to this robot, said, you don't have some grand purpose like all other robots. You were designed to work for humans. Key truth, humans were designed to glorify God and enjoy him forever. That's it. So now the church. Can we or should we use AI in the church? Are there limits? I'm just going to go to the key truths. A question to ask, are you growing in Christ-likeness or AI-likeness? Okay. Was it you, Kelly, that said something about, you know, we're going to lose the ability to think? So we have a responsibility for the Word, understanding God's Word, our reputation. What's our witness? Can people trust us, that it's us giving spiritual counsel, that it's us giving a sermon from the pulpit? Or is it AI? What about our relationship, our union with Christ? Are we talking a ChatGPT Jesus? So, key truth, pursuit of productivity at the expense of spiritual process and spiritual formation is not a good bargain. We might be more productive, and there are some things that we can be more productive in the church. For example, Chris has said he uses AI. I don't think he'll be mad at me. He'll use AI to help solve some technical problem with maybe this stuff like I just had earlier. You know, he's using it for that, but he's very consciously thinking about where do I cross over into something now that I'm portraying myself in a way, or I'm cheating myself in a way that I'm not putting the cognitive effort, the spiritual effort, I'm not taking advantage of the fruits of the Spirit in growing and in advancing. Another great quote from Tim Challies. I'm going to have to get those out to you somehow. Those are great. So, will we fear AI or trust God? God is sovereign, okay? Contra Booster Sam Altman, the world already has a brain. And Contra Doomster Dario Amodei, powerful AI will not determine humanity's destiny. That was what, in that previous quote, Amodei was saying. Here's what we got. God's sovereign. His providence worked out either by provision or permission. Either he's going to provide something, determine something, dictate something, or he's going to allow something. But it's all working together for his purpose, his grand purpose. Many are the plans in the mind of a man, but it is the purpose of the Lord that will stand. I don't know where AI is going. Okay? A lot of people making a lot of predictions. It's going to end humanity. It's going to lead to the flourishing of humanity. I don't know. I know what I used to say to my daughters. They would ask me a question. Dad, who made trees? Or turtles or stars or whatever? And I'd say, well, God made trees. Who made airplanes? I had to use that one. Or cars or pencils or whatever it is. And I would say, well, man made airplanes, but God made man with hands to work with and minds to think with. And they would giggle. But that's so true. And I found out in my research here, Abraham Kuyper said basically the same thing. God gave man the soil, a head to think with, hands to work with, and besides these, a basic hunger to kind of drive us to work. Well, in that story by E.M. Forster, they don't have to work for their food. She pushes a button, says, I want my food, and there it is. And that's where some people are wanting to take some of this. A father's answers to his creatures. For us, there is one God, the Father, from whom are all things and for whom we exist, and one Lord, Jesus Christ, through whom are all things and through whom we exist. I'll just close with this. Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. Behold your God, as Rich has been talking about in Isaiah 40, and keep focus. AI and robots cannot love us, save us, or give us purpose for now or hope for the future. We have a job to do. We have a great commission to do. We need to draw others to Christ, not to AI. Thank you for bearing with me. I ran over 5 minutes. sorry about that, and I hope this was helpful.